The Ag, Rural Development, and Housing Finance Committee will come to order. Members, welcome back. We have an overview today. Quorum's not quite present, but they'll come in as we're moving forward. But first of all, welcome back, members, to the 2019 session. Our committee has remained the same with members, so probably no need for new introduction of members. Again, our staff, maybe for the benefit of all of us, I'll just have their staff introduce ourselves on the pages. They have changed a little. Why don't we do that, and then we'll get into our presentation. Kyle, you want to start?
Sure. Kyle Berndt, the committee administrator.
Alex?
Greg Knapp, Senate Counsel Research.
Alex Rennell, Legislative Assistant to Senator Westrom.
Dan Mueller, Fiscal Analyst.
All right. Thank you, Pages. We look forward to a great session with your help. Appreciate your help for the committee. So, members, before we have our first presenter come forward, just briefly to our committee and the finance jurisdiction of our committee, we have rural broadband this year and the funding thereof. And so that's what our overview today is, to look at the rural broadband program we have established here in Minnesota and just get more familiar with it, the need, and what the past program has done and accomplished, and any pros or cons that testifiers may have to offer insight to us as we contemplate this issue going forward. So with that, we'll ask the director, Dana McKenzie, from the Office of Broadband Development to come and give us an overview, and then we'll have a few further testifiers from the industry.
Good afternoon. My name is Dana McKenzie, and I currently serve as the Executive Director for the Minnesota Office of Broadband Development that's currently housed in Deed.
Very good. Welcome to our committee. Great to have you here, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for dedicating this time to take a little bit of a deeper dive into this issue. This is something our office hears from the public and communities on a daily basis. We receive calls and emails really giving us the indication that the gaps really do exist and there are still opportunities for the state to help close those gaps. I have been asked today to give you a little bit of a primer or the background on the policies and programs we have in place in the state, and a little bit of a snapshot of where we stand today as far as progress on those goals. I have several minutes of prepared remarks, and then I'm happy to answer questions when we're done. With that, I will proceed on to the first slide, and for those of you who track these issues, some of these slides are going to be familiar to you, but I just wanted to make sure that we kind of covered the basics for those who haven't been tracking, following along. I like to include this timeline, which shows work extending from the year 2008 up until the present time. And really, the two things to note with this slide today are, one, that the state has been at this a while, since actually pre-2008, but there has been a lot of deliberate thought and action taken in the intervening years. The second piece I would like to note is that the state's policy and programs have been iterative and have evolved over time as we've learned from each of the steps, incremental and iterative. And as I describe what we have in place now, we can talk a little bit about that piece, which has really led us to four strong components of our program that have put us in a place of national recognition about the stack that our state has in place. The next step in front of you, or the next slide in front of you, is actually a visualization of those four pieces that make up the state's grouping of policies and programs. And when we talk about, when we're asked about what the state's broadband plan is, we talk about how it's deliberately high level and dynamic in order to respond to changing conditions and unique combination of variables that exist in each region of our state, because through experience, we've learned that that is the case. The first element you'll see in this quadrant is the state broadband goals. Those goals were set back in 2010. They were put into statute, and what they've done is they've provided us a compass point to focus the rest of our work and our attention towards. And so all of our policies and programs really point towards those state goals. We have a two-tiered state speed goal, one for the year 2022 and one for the year 2026, as well as some goals to shoot for national leadership in the position in both the availability and use of broadband across the state. The second component of that stack is the data and mapping program. This work allows us to measure progress towards the goals, identify gaps, and check for the need for program realignment to address evolving needs and changing conditions as they may evolve throughout as time proceeds. The step that was taken after the data and mapping program was put into place was the creation of the broadband office. And again, it was deliberately put into the Department of Employment and Economic Development to recognize, number one, it's the infrastructure is important to the economic vitality of all parts of our state. And it has served as that focal point for the public and providers when there are questions and issues regarding broadband, because as we all know, broadband tends to touch just about everything we work on, but no one owns it specifically. So the creation of the office has provided the state with the ability to do that. And then finally, and we'll talk more about this later, is the financial tool that was put in place in 2014, and that is the broadband border-to-border grant program. This slide has a lot of words on it, and what it is a list of the things that our office deals with beyond the high-profile ones that I've just talked about and that you've heard. Largely, there are a number of slides in this deck so that you have this information in your packet of materials as your conversation evolves. I would just highlight a couple of things with this slide in addition to the pieces that I've already mentioned, in that there's a lot of cross-agency work that's done through the office. Whether it is with working with the Department of Education to assess the connectivity of our school districts across the state and provide technical assistance in improving those services where necessary, whether it's working with MnDOT on permitting issues and rights-of-way access that crop up when our broadband deployment companies are trying to deploy service into unserved areas, or it might be working with the Public Utilities Commission or staff thereof in finding ways that the Federal Lifeline Program can help bring broadband service to more low-income homes. But that's really a theme that there's quite a bit more that goes on through that office than just the grant program. The next slide is a product of our data and mapping program, and which shows two heat maps of county-based snapshot of where we are at today in progress towards our broadband access goals. The left map shows you that we are making progress overall. It points us towards the counties that may need some additional attention and possibly new strategies to get them to that baseline level of service and hopefully higher. The map shows four counties still in red, and those red counties indicate counties where less than 50% of their homes and businesses have access at that baseline level of speed that we've defined as a priority. And then Aiken, Fillmore, Pine, and Yellow Medicine are those counties, and potentially over this next year will warrant some additional attention and maybe new strategies. That said, our technical assistance team has been in communication with both providers and communities, and we know of feasibility studies and project proposals that are under development in at least three of those four counties. So we're optimistic that should the program continue, we'll see some movement in those areas as well over the next cycle. The map on the right gives we have not focused a lot of attention in the past couple of years about that second goal, the 2026 goal, but we are starting to monitor that more closely. The second map shows that there are counties all across the state that are well prepared for achieving and meeting those 2026 goals, but there are many that have yet to achieve that service and that level of service, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. And quickly, the next map that is in front of you, for those of you who follow, is our pink and blue map that we've been using since the beginning to really track our progress at a more granular level about where service exists in the state and where it doesn't. And as you can see, the data that is used to derive this map suggests our estimate is currently at approximately 185,000 households across the state still have yet to have access to that baseline, which is defined in statute as 25 megabits down by 3 megabits up. And then, of course, that goal is by 2022. And on this map, there is probably about a 50% of the area of the state that shows up in blue, in light blue and dark blue, which means they exceed the service that they have available to them, exceeds that 25 by 3. There is a teal color, which is about a third of the state, which has already met the 2026 goal of 100 megabits down by 20 megabits up. The next map in the slide deck is an example of how we use this data for more vertical questions. In this case, what's before you is a map that's based on the school districts in the across the state. An earlier slide mentioned that one of our charges is measuring connectivity to our anchor institutions and working to help address those gaps where they are identified. The work that we've done through our K-12 Connect Forward initiative over the last 2 years has allowed us to build a much more accurate picture of how well our Minnesota schools are connected than we previously had in prior to the program inception. This work has highlighted the significant progress has been made in recent years to making sure every school district in the state has the connectivity they need at an increasingly affordable price. Over 300 school districts in the state, and we are down to 8 districts that do not have access to a scalable or fiber-based connection that allows them to scale the access at the school district at the point in time when their educational or business demands require it. For perspective, those numbers were 68 school districts when we first started tracking this a couple of years ago. So good progress. You'll see also there's a table, three metrics that we track for school districts to get an idea of how well the connectivity is at home for those school districts. And this map shows us that 56 of our school districts have 100% connectivity at that goal speed, while 47 districts have less than 50% of their homes, and 6 districts have no homes have access at that goal speed, at that first tier goal speed of 25.3. Again, this map was created to help superintendents and school board members assess their readiness for initiatives like one-to-one, where they're sending devices home and making some base assumptions about whether or not students have access at home.
Senator Dietzick has a question. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late. I don't know if you want questions now, so I'll just ask. But when you talk about 100% of the households have access, I'm assuming you mean that there is, like in the city of Minneapolis, there's internet options. But I would question, are you looking at, because in my area there might be availability because there's wire and technology there, but not all of them have access because they can't afford it. So how are you defining what you mean by 100% access?
Absolutely.
Ms. McKenzie.
Mr. Chair. Senator, that's a very good question. And state policy at this point in time has been focused on the first half of the question, is whether or not the infrastructure and the ability to get service, that question has been answered. So at this point, when we talk about 100% access, we mean that home has at least one option available to them. And while the office has been charged with the other side of the equation, the inclusion and adoption, there have not been significant state resources put forward to that, so there hasn't been much of our time spent on that, although we do track it.
Ms. McKenzie,
Mr. Chair.
The eight schools that don't have internet, do you happen to know them offhand? Or
I didn't bring the list, but I'm happy to get it to you.
Okay, just a little bit of interest. From recollection, is it kind of scattered, or is there a certain area of the state
that it's more dominant? Mr. Chair, we have an area that is in the west central portion of the state that made some initial investments in other types of technology that are getting ready, potentially in a position to mature to a next generation technology that gives them more capacity. So there's a grouping of schools there, and then the other very expected candidate is the Northwest Angle. For reasons that submarine cable is difficult and expensive. And so that one hasn't been addressed either.
Go ahead.
The next slide, and I'm not going to spend much time on this, but I just want to give you a brief glimpse of another lens that we look at this through, because we also like to work with the League of Minnesota Cities and Minnesota cities in general. So we're trying to track different aspects of how this impacts cities. This map in front of you shows cities in Minnesota that have at least 25% of their homes with access to gigabit capacity, which, just for reference, is the standard that Comcast has now developed for its network nationwide. So we like to track this. Even though it's not a state goal, it gives us an indication of what types of investments are being made in greater Minnesota. And just as a reference, I believe when we first started tracking this number in 2017, the number was 286 cities had some gigabit access. And when we looked at it in 2018, we were up to 446. So again, some good indication that investments are being made in those areas. And then the next slide is just the flip side of that. Again, trying to examine what does the program as we currently have it defined look like from a Minnesota city perspective. So we wanted to take a look at what cities don't have that baseline 25.3 access. And the map that's on the screen at the moment shows that we have identified, as of today, 120 cities in Minnesota that still don't have at least 50% access at that base level of service. And again, for perspective and showing progress is being made, in 2017, that number was 186.
Senator Johnson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just from practicality aspect, what sort of investment do we need to make to turn these cities into those higher speed cities? Is it infrastructure in the ground, or are we talking switches within the communication buildings, or what kind of investment do we need to make to do that?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, Senator, one of the things that's about the program is that it's technology neutral, and we don't have a specific answer to that question. I can tell you anecdotally from the projects that we have funded is that it's all of the above that you just described. In some instances, it's upgrading the electronics. In some instances, it is replacing very aging cable that can no longer support the higher speeds. In some cases, it's putting up a tower that allows a next generation fixed wireless service to serve more people in that area.
Senator Johnson, you're good. All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Very quickly, the slide that we have next is just to show you what's next as far as the data program. One of the pieces that's been missing from the state picture of broadband data is the consumer experience and the consumer voice. 2 months ago, we launched CheckSpeedMinnesota.com to provide a place for consumers to do a speed test and allow us to aggregate data in such a way that we may be able to draw some meaningful conclusions on how the consumer experience compares with the other data that we have. To date, we have about 6,000 entries in that database. It will take quite a few more for us to be able to draw any meaningful conclusions, but I wanted to bring that newer effort to your attention. The next slide I am not going to read is just a reminder. We are moving into now that fourth pillar or that fourth bucket of our policy and programs, and that is the grant program itself. And this slide simply reminds us about what the program is. And it is a 50% matching capital program that pays for up to 50% of capital costs and labor to deploy broadband infrastructure into unserved and underserved areas. The next slide.
Ms. McKenzie, up to 50%, do you have any grants that you give out where the requester maybe is asking for less, or you see it as a scenario that doesn't need 50%, or is everything 50% that's going?
Mr. Chair, that's a good question. The way that our evaluation criteria works is grantee applications actually receive some additional points or consideration if they are able to bring a higher level of match to the table, because one of the desired outcomes of the program is to leverage additional private investment, and so we do award some consideration when that happens.
So, Ms. McKenzie, so some of the projects are going for less, or that just gets them in the door? Explain that a little bit more.
Mr. Chair, yes. Some of the projects, and I don't have the span, but some of the projects will bring 60% match to the table, for instance, or 70% match, saying that they only need that 30% boost in order to put this project, the financials, into the black.
Oh, I see. Okay. And then they'll receive higher points in the rating. So it's a stronger application, perhaps.
Correct.
In that, okay, very good.
Right. The next slide shows a couple of pictures of broadband installers. Those of you who have seen this presentation have seen this before, but it's always helpful for those of us in St. Paul to remind ourselves of what this grant is actually paying for. And one of the pictures is of a broadband installer up to his chest in a swamp running cable into a rural area. And the other is demonstrating why Rock County is called Rock County with the rock drill there. The next slide is just a few brief bullet points about the parameters of the grant. I'm not going to take a deep dive into all of them today, but kind of wanted to touch on the high points. When there is an appropriation for the grant program, it is distributed in a single annual competitive grant round. One of the caveats of the investments are that anything that the state invests in must be scalable to 100 megs up by 100 megs down. And what that does is that allows any state investments to be long-term and meet both the 2022 and the 2026 goals. And then we just talked about the one-to-one match requirement and that those grants be geographically dispersed across the state. I'm not going to spend any time on this side because I know I'm going to go over my time because there's so much to cover here. The next slide is a reminder of who's eligible for the grant. And it's just as a reminder, basically anyone who's able to prove that they have the wherewithal and to deliver high-quality broadband and sustain it over time in the state is eligible to apply for these funds. And in another slide, I'll cover who's actually using the program. Here's another slide with a lot of words, and again, largely meant for your packet, but I wanted to introduce the fact that there's a long list of criteria that every grant application is run through by the evaluators before scoring and ranking them, and there's a variety of criteria here. Again, I won't go into this in detail, but I'm happy to answer any more questions about what criteria are considered in those applications at the appropriate time. There is one that I wanted to highlight for you today because it's probably going to be important for your discussions, and we are asked regularly about how the state investments interact with the federal investments that are being made. And so the slide in front of you is a snapshot of a mapping system that we use. The application evaluators look at this map, which includes all of the federal investments that are being made across the state. And so that information is taken into consideration when those evaluations are made and recommendations for funding are made. No state grant goes into an area where there is a broadband project that is either in process or budgeted for that meets or exceeds the state speed goals. There are some situations where state funds are braided with, are paired with federal funds to amplify the results of the progress. In other words, allow them to deliver a higher level of service at a faster pace than would have otherwise happened with the federal funds alone. And so that's in a simplified manner, that's how the state and federal pieces interact. And what we've seen is the broadband developers have used the state program, and I'll use this term, you may hear this because like a scalpel. The state funds are able to get into those little places and those places that fall between the cracks of federal and other situations. And so that's how we're seeing our broadband builders use this tool. The next map just is a visual of where investments are being made, and what it shows is that of the 110 projects that the state has invested in the 4 years the program has been funded, investments have happened in all regions of the state. Notably, there are a couple of regions that don't show awards, and that's largely because either no one lives there or those areas are completely served and don't need any assistance. And the other point on this slide is it'll show you that over 39,000 homes and businesses so far have been served with the program to date. It's leveraged another $110 million in private and local match. And of the 110 projects, 44 of those have come to completion, with another 10 to 12 that are in the pipeline for a closeout coming soon. This slide is that list of who's actually using the program. We've got small and large telephone companies, cable providers, wireless ISPs, electric co-op, broadband co-op, K-12 service co-op, and counties and townships are also involved in the program. And then finally, just part of our responsibility with managing this portfolio of investments for the states is learning from our investments. So we are constantly studying the different configurations, technology, and financial and partnerships that are happening with these projects, trying to learn what is working well. Where might they need additional support from us? Sometimes that's in coaching, not in financial thing. Issues, and then also what types of models are working. So I would just flag, we are seeing some emerging trends. We are seeing the emerging use of hybrid models, where it's a mix of fixed wireless and fiber. We are seeing more use of next generation fixed wireless, and we're seeing electric co-ops start to get involved in the equation in some ways. And so those are three trends that we are watching today. And with that, just a few more pictures of the projects underway, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Senator Dreheim has a question.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Director, thank you for reading my mind on the federal information, by the way. In regards to the feds, do you have any numbers on projects that they've done, or households, or miles, or dollars that the federal government has dumped into the broadband?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I did not bring any numbers with me. It's possible Brent Christensen from MTA may have some of that information as part of his presentation. We can certainly get that to you, and as you are maybe aware, there are multiple streams of federal work that's being done here, and I can get those numbers to you.
That would be wonderful. Okay. Thank you. Can I
Senator
do a follow-up?
Dreheim, follow-up.
Thank you. Do you have any idea or any average what it takes to finish a township? So if you break down the counties into a township, I know not all townships are the same, but is there any baseline per project or per mile that you use to help figure out the projects?
Mr. Chair, Senator, because the program is, I'm going to give you a squishy answer, I apologize, but because the program is technology neutral, the way it works is that a community or a provider comes to the program with a proposal, and the proposals are going to look very different, whether that is a fiber-based proposal, whether that is a fixed wireless proposal, whether that is an enhanced DSL proposal. So we don't have any baselines. Again, I am I would suggest asking Brent Christensen about average cost per mile for wireline service, because I would expect that's one number that we can probably dial in pretty tightly.
Thank you. And if I could, one more, Chair, please.
One more.
Thank you.
And another one if you need. Senator
no, Dreher. Thank you. And I appreciate your work on this very important subject, so thank you. If you could come to the state and ask for a dollar amount to finish the whole state, any idea what that would be looking forward?
Mr. Chair?
Hail Mary right out of the chute here.
And fortunately, I have the luxury of claiming that our commissioner has not yet arrived, and it is my job to represent both the new commissioner and the governor's position on this. And we have those discussions have yet to happen. So I don't have any new information on that.
So I think Senator Dreher is more, if I understood it right, Senator Dreher, just. Is there a number of what you think it would take to finish the state at the current standard? And is that a number even remotely available? Or I don't think he's saying we're going to put you on record as saying that's your request. He's just interested in the cost, if I understood his question right. Senator Dreher, am
you're,
I?
You're absolutely correct, Chair. Thank you. I'm just a ballpark, just... to communicate with the other members of the Senate, it'd be nice to know where we're headed. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Ms. McKenzie.
The one number that we would look to is the one that was published by the Broadband Task Force. And they put some math behind that, and that was largely based on the projected number of households that we have left to serve for the 2022 goal, not the 2026 goal. So we don't have math on the 2026 goal at this point. But for the 2022 goal, the math that was used to derive that recommendation actually backed out expected federal investments, backed out expected private investments, and calculated what the state's lift would be in light of that. And so the number that you've seen, and I think you will hear from the broadband coalition members later in the hearing, and the number that they are using is based on that number from the task force. And it is, if I recall it, it is roughly $35 million a year until per year to meet the 2022 goal.
Okay, very good. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that in the early days of these projects, we would have some difficulties with communities that were being served, perhaps underserved by other providers, and as a result, they couldn't get included in in the projects that were developed. Have we tightened up those situations where, you know, it seemed like if the current provider said, well, they were going to do this or going to do that, that then the communities couldn't get involved. And but sometimes that didn't really happen. Have we worked on that issue at all?
Ms. McKenzie? I think he's talking a little about the challenge process. If
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, absolutely. And I would note that we are aware of those concerns as well, that the state policy is currently focused very firmly on prioritizing the unserved over what I believe I heard you just describe was what might be fall under our definition, the state's definition of underserved, and that those underserved areas may be impacted by the current iteration of the challenge language that's in law. And our office is trying to stay very neutral on that issue. I do believe the Broadband Coalition and some of its members are going to want to raise those policy questions during this session. And so this may be the first opportunity that there's been interest to have a broader discussion about that issue, but we are aware of it.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. McKenzie, if you want to finish up and then any other questions, then we'll move on.
Mr. Chair, I am done with my comments, so I'm happy to step aside. If there are other questions that come up later in discussion, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay, members, other questions for Ms. McKenzie right now? Very good. Thank you for your overview and recap. Stay close by. If something comes up, we might have to call you back up. So, next, Minnesota Telephone Association, Brent Christensen and Anna Boroff with the cable providers jointly coming up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record, and go. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. We're the trade association that represents 44 independent telecom providers throughout the state of Minnesota. Before I get into my job here is to kind of go into a broadband 101 and talk a little bit about what broadband is and what it isn't. I would like to make a couple comments to dovetail on what Ms. McKenzie testified to just a minute ago. When this broadband program started and the office was created, and I believe that was 2013, I was not a fan. I saw this as more government, and I saw this as possibly getting to regulatory environment for broadband. And I was wrong, and I've said that publicly before. Doesn't happen very often, but I did admit to that. This office has done a phenomenal job of not just administering the broadband grant program, but they've also helped us in a lot of different ways in breaking down barriers that we've had to deploying broadband. The most recent example that I can give is we were having problems with MnDOT permitting in rights of way. They were taking 8 to 12 weeks for a permit to be approved. And as you know, we have a very short construction cycle. So we really needed that expedited. And Dana and Diane Wells from the office have facilitated meetings with DEED through their One Minnesota program and helped us to shorten that time frame. It's not totally fixed yet, but it is getting better. And there's a lot of other examples I could get into. We did a lot of work on the front end of this program when this broadband grant program was created, and I think that's paid off. This program is got a lot of complication, got a lot of nuances that she described, but because of the work that we did on the front end, we're being touted as the Minnesota model around the country. I've been invited to testify, and I did testify before the Michigan House of Representatives on our broadband grant program. And I think between Dana and myself, we've probably spoke to over a dozen different states and used our model as an example. And the reason that it has worked is because we've been focused on getting broadband dollars to the truly unserved parts of the state. And we put a lot of work on the front end, like I said. And so that, I think, has benefited all of us. It also created some unintended consequences and some partnerships that we've never dreamt of before. And Dana touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to kind of expound on it a little bit. Some of the very first projects that happened, Big Stone County, Swift County, the county came to the table and provided and bonded for the money that helped provide the match along with private providers that built out that county. They're done. They're there. Those partnerships wouldn't have happened if not for this broadband grant program, in my opinion. And then I have got a couple examples, and Ms. Boroff is going to give you some more examples of how this has worked. One of my members, Woodstock Communications in Ruthin, Minnesota, has taken their fiber network and expanded it into and incorporated fixed wireless into their networks, and that has really gone a long way, and they're continuing to deploy towers that is getting fixed wireless and getting broadband to people that didn't have it before. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll kind of move into what you asked me to do and go into a little bit of the broadband and come on the 101 about this.
Mr. Christensen, briefly as you transition, the fixed wireless with Woodstock Communications, would that, am I right in presuming that would be a way to serve farms or more rural residents more by having the wire to the tower, but then the tower would extend it that extra mile or two or three at the end?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what it is. And I will talk a little bit about the technologies here in a minute.
Perfect.
But that's exactly what it does. Yes, sir.
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
So when you think about broadband, the easiest way I have to describe this is to people that don't know anything about broadband is to talk about kind of as a water pipe. The broadband is the pipe and the internet is the water that, that functions down there. And I think that's the easiest way to describe that. And just so you know what the internet, I mean, everybody is, knows what the internet is, but just so you know what it is, it's a global network that provides a variety of information and communications facilities, and it's a network of networks. That's why they call it the interweb, because it's just a network of interconnected networks that use a standard communications protocols. You hear a lot of talk about the cloud. It's software services that run on the internet instead of on your computer locally. You know, to me, it's almost like we've come full circle. If you remember back in the days of controlled data, we had these big mainframe computers, and then we moved, transitioned from those, and we get into personal computers at home. Well, with the cloud, we've almost kind of gone back to that. So a lot of the programs and software don't reside on your computer anymore. They reside on a series of servers throughout the world. I'm trying to, if I go too fast through this or you want to talk about anything, obviously stop me, but I'm trying to get to the good stuff as quick as I can. So you hear about kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, and then you hear about kilobits, megabits, and gigabits, and what is all of that? Well, a byte and a kilobyte is roughly about two or three paragraphs of text. A megabyte is roughly about the size of storing four 200-page books in storage. And then a gigabyte is much bigger, obviously. It's 4,400 200-page books, or 341 digital pictures, or 256 MP3 audio files. That just gives you an idea of the size of the storage. So broadband is measured in the amount of data that is transmitted per second. So we used to talk, if you remember in the dial-up days, I remember when I started at the telephone company, we were at 14.4 kilobits per second. That's what a fax machine operates at. And when we went to 56K modems, I thought we'd died and gone to heaven. And then you get into, now we're into megabits, and then now we're talking about even gigabits as far as speed goes and what's necessary. So I think of the internet as a living and breathing entity that is growing over time. And the question before you guys is, how are we going to make it grow faster? That's it. It's going to grow. It's how do we make it grow faster? So you hear a lot about download speeds versus upload speeds. And the download speed is the amount of time it takes to transmit data from the internet to the end user. And upload is the amount of time it takes from the end user up to the internet. And we measure that, and now we're measuring that at the FCC-defined definition of 25 megabits down, 3 megabits up. So that's 25 megabits to download information, and then 3 megabits per second to upload information. So what do we consider broadband? Well, I would submit to you that it's a moving target. When we started talking and the term broadband was defined, the FCC defined it as 256 kilobits per second. I will tell you that my family's company and most of my members, I don't think any of us even offer that anymore. You can't go that slow anymore. Then the FCC moved the definition up to 768 kilobits per second. Then they started factoring in download speeds and upload speeds. Then they had it at 4.1. Then it was at 10.1, and it still is at 10.1. And they used the 10.1 and the 4.1 definitions with some federal funding. But the definition that they go with today is 25 megabits down and 3 megabits up.
Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman.
Concern of not getting too long of an answer, why 25 down and 3 up to the non-tech head here? Why is it slower to upload as opposed to download? Or is there a reason that the download speed is so much bigger than the upload, and just technologically is?
Mr. Chairman, that is an excellent question, and that is one that I rely on the committee to ask, because as a technician at heart, I forget about those things and just assume that everybody knows that. So thank you for the question. You have to remember that the internet was originally built on the telephone network. That's when we started with dial-up and all those things. So when we designed, and I say we, I didn't do this, but when the engineers designed internet, they saw that there was more of a need to download than there was to upload. And this is way back in the beginning. So they focused their efforts on download speeds and less on the upload speed so that they could get more download, because the telephone lines were, and their cable lines were only so big. So they had to design the network so they could pass information back and forth on the same network, and they focused their efforts on the download speeds. As we transition to fixed wireless, to fiber, that is no longer relevant, and a lot of my members are transitioning to just the same upload and download speeds. Does that answer your question, sir? Okay. So I want to take a moment and just talk a little bit about how broadband is delivered. And Ms. McKenzie did a good job of talking about how her office is technology agnostic. Well, what are the technologies out there? And of course, I'm going to lead with the telephone companies, because in my mind, we started all this. And so we are for the providers, both incumbent providers and competitive providers that provide telephone services. Ms. Boroff is going to talk about her members, which are the cable companies. So we came at it, and we put internet on our telephone lines, basically. The cable companies came in, and they put internet on their broadcast TV lines. And so we're both doing the same thing from using the existing technologies that we had. Cellular companies do the same thing. They offer internet over their cellular networks. And then recently, within the last probably dozen years, wireless internet service providers came along that focused on fixed wireless. And then you've heard a lot about satellite technology. And I'm going to talk a little bit about each of these. As I stated, we started with dial-up. We use our existing copper lines to provide digital subscriber lines, or DSL. We have transitioned from that to fiber to the premise. I call fiber to the X because it could be fiber to the home, fiber to the premise, fiber to the curb. We get fiber to the network. And the reason we do that is the closer we can get the customer to fiber, the faster the speeds we can offer them. So in my family company's case, we didn't overbuild our whole network with fiber up front. We are doing that now. But we started by putting fiber out into the rural areas to cabinets and then reusing the copper plant from that cabinet to the end user. And then over time, we're transitioning that copper facilities out. So eventually, we'll have fiber to premise. Some companies went out and borrowed money, and they built fiber to the prem right from the beginning. And then you have a mixture of both. The goal is to get fiber as close to the customer as possible. Traditional cable companies, they leverage their existing cable plant with cable modems. They've incorporated hybrid fiber coax networks. They, too, have also done fiber to the premise. And their goal is the same as ours, to get fiber as close to the customer. The closer you get, the more bandwidth you get. Cellular companies, and because I get to do this presentation, I get to lead with this. We put the wire in wireless. The only thing wireless in your cell phone is from the tower to your handset. Once it gets up to the tower, it goes onto the same telephone network as all the landline customers. So they do use radio frequencies to get from the tower to the handset. And then there are experts that can get into the whole 3G, 4G, LTE, 5G conversation. I am not a subject matter expert on that. Then a little bit about the wireless internet service providers. They put up an antenna at your house, and some of them use FCC licensed spectrum. Some used unlicensed radio frequencies or spectrum to transmit data from their tower to the end user. Now, they can do the same thing as cellular companies and then connect up to our broadband network or their own fiber to that tower or copper, or they can use wireless signals and use that for backhaul. So they'll go from a grain bin to a grain bin to beam a signal and then get to that antenna and beam it down to the customer. And then satellite broadband, you've heard a lot about that. They use a dish that pushes the internet up to the satellite and then from the satellite down to the end user, kind of like a DirecTV or dish model that you get for TV Day, something similar to that. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the end of my Broadband 101, unless there are other questions.
Questions, members? I've got a question on the copper, and then Senator Dreheim has one. So the object is to get fiber as close to the premises. How much speed can you send through a copper line, like you were first describing, that you'd get to certain nodes or certain points in the street, and then there'd still be some coppers? What's the limitation on the copper, or can you send 25.3 or 120 up or down and up through copper if you're close enough? Or what's the limitations there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And to that question, how much can you send through fiber comparatively otherwise?
I don't know that anybody knows how much you can send through fiber. We used to use just one light spectrum to transmit data, and now they're using a variety of a whole spectrum of colors. So they're making that one fiber as many colors as there are in the rainbow and transmit data on each color spectrum. To your first question, Mr. Chairman, the distance, I think, is 4,500 feet. If you can keep your copper loop down to about that or under a mile, you can get 40, 50, 60 meg download speeds, and I don't know what the upload speeds are, but it's significantly higher than 3 meg. So that's the whole reason we're trying to shorten that distance. The shorter the distance, the more bandwidth you can put over that pipe.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. The slide you had up on how is broadband delivered, do you track, using the money we put in the Office of Broadband, how much is spent or used or utilized with the telephone company versus a cable company or a cellular company or ISP or a satellite company?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dreheim, yes, I do. I can tell you on a company level, I don't have that information with me, but I can certainly give that to you. I can give you a breakdown of every grant that's been awarded since the beginning and to the company, and I can give you a pretty decent idea of what technology that company used. I can't tell you how many customers they got. I believe that information's in the grant applications, but I don't track that information.
Follow-up, Chair?
Follow-up. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you. If you could pass that along, that'd be wonderful. When I look at the maps, I see some gaps, and I'm worried about the gaps coming back to fill those gaps if we're not going to leave anybody behind and we have to come back. As an industry, are you worried about those gaps and the fiscal cost it's going to be to come back and fix maybe some pockets?
Mr. Chairman,
Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dreheim, are you asking me worried about the fiscal cost to the state or to the providers? Or
I think they're tied together.
Senator Dreheim?
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dreheim, I would agree. The state dollars, I believe that broadband's going to get just about everywhere. It's inevitable. The thing that happens is you get some pockets like you're talking about in the state where you just can't make a business case to make that happen. And that's where the state program has done a really great job, in my opinion, of filling those gaps. I believe that if we can keep this program going, and I do not have an answer for you on how long that is, I don't think it's forever. I think there's a definite set of years. I think it depends on how much money you put into the program. I do believe we're going to get there, and we're going to get all of the places that we can. And you have to keep in mind, too, that we never got 100% coverage in telephone service in this country. We got to 98. And so we're getting there with broadband, and it's going. And one of the things I didn't mention that I think is important to this conversation is the Office of Broadband Development through the grant program, and the grant program that you've all funded has done a very good job of. It took us a while to get there, but I think we finally figured out how to dial this in with the federal money that's coming in and maximizing it. We've got a couple projects that were awarded in 2017, because we didn't have money in 2018. But in 2017, one of the companies, Hanson Communications, they used and applied and got a grant to up the speeds and up the coverage places that they had gotten federal money for. And to me, that was like, okay, didn't get a lot of notice, but that was a really big deal, because we're using a little bit of federal money or state money to supplement the private investment and the public sector dollars, which I think is a really big deal.
So one last question, if I
could, Senator Graham.
So there's been a lot of discussion on broadband the last 2 years that I've been here, and some have brought up the fact that they're disappointed in the counties not having plans to cover the whole county. What's your experience, your members' experience with working with the counties, and you know, any idea of there's numbers that have a plan and those that don't? Thank you.
Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Draheim, I think it's all over the map. I don't think there's a silver bullet. I think you got to find a local unit of government that's interested in participating. I use the examples of Big Stone and Swift County. I will tell you, I live in Watonwan County. There's zero interest in the county funding that. It's not because they don't think broadband is important. It's just they think that they're leaving it up to us to do it. So it's all over the map. But it's also happening, and you mentioned earlier about the townships. That's some of the partnerships, too, that have happened through this grant program that I don't think would have happened any other way. Sunrise Township in Chisago County is a great example. They applied for and got a grant they were part of a CAF 2 bill that CenturyLink had. They wanted more, and they wanted better speeds. And so they decided they were going to pick up the tab for that difference, partly with a broadband grant. So that was a great example. We've got really good examples of things that are working. There are some examples around the state where it really didn't work. But I think that's what it's going to take. There's going to have to be local buy-in. If we're going to get those pockets you're talking about, we got to do it with partnerships with the townships and the counties. I don't know if the county level is better or the township level. I think it depends on the individual area, but there's going to have to be that buy-in.
So, Mr. Christensen, to that point, if there's pockets in a township or a county that aren't served, but other parts up to those pocket areas are built out under the grant program, does it become more expensive to serve those unserved pockets that I referenced, or is it kind of linear in that they can build off of the internet that's closer now, or does it some? I think that's a little what Senator Draheim's asking is, does it get exponentially more expensive to finish that corner of the township that didn't get done if you do just two-thirds of it to begin with?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a really good question that gets to a really strong debate that happens. My personal feeling is it is a lot cheaper to extend an existing network than it is to build one from scratch. When you and it is easier to leapfrog on. So if you have, in your example, a township where two-thirds of it is served and one-third of it is not, it is a lot easier to go back the next year and apply for a grant and to build that out or make that business case work to build that area out than it would be for them to start on their own.
Thank you. Senator Goggin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be for Ms. McKenzie, too. And I want to thank her for all the help that we had with questions for some of my constituents. But the big concern is getting the request into the broadband office and filling out all that paperwork. Is there any way we can get, like, a workshop together or anything like that that might help these small townships especially get past their fear of filling out that paperwork and all that? And do they have to have a provider alongside with the request, or can they just put in a request that says, you know, hey, Crick Township, we'd like to get the broadband here?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Goggin, she's going to give you the official answer. I will give you a personal real-life example. We have a community that we're trying to get to that we would have applied for a broadband grant this year. And we hope that it gets funded so we can apply for it next year. It's a town of 150 people. I work this job. I also help out at my family's company, and I still was able to figure out how to do the application. They have done a really remarkable job of making the application process as easy as it possibly can. Then I'll let her give you the official answer.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Go ahead, Ms. McKenzie.
Thank you for the question. We do run workshops at the beginning of every cycle when the program is funded, and there is no requirement that a community have a broadband provider identified at that time. They are welcome to come and learn the process, and we then provide technical assistance throughout the process for any community that desires that. A great majority of them either already have a provider identified, or it's the provider that's taking the lead on the application process and taking on the burden of doing the work. But the program, as it's currently written, welcomes all and provides the assistance they need to get through that process.
Very good. Thanks. No other questions, members? Ms. Boroff. Why don't I identify yourself for the record? And thank you, Ms. McKenzie, by the way. And then please offer your testimony, and then we have the Coalition of Rural Broadband next.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna Boroff, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. So it's good to be in your committee. My members represent all of Minnesota's major cable companies, so large, mid-size, and small, metro, suburban, and rural. We serve over a million households in every corner of Minnesota, from southern Minnesota to Schaumburg's Media and Thief River Falls, and collectively employ about 4,000 Minnesotans. And so together with Brent's association, we represent the vast majority of rural broadband providers. So I just wanted to briefly mention our perspective on the issue of broadband and the broadband grant program. And I want to echo Brent's comments in terms of we really appreciate the collaboration that both Deed and the Office of Broadband have taken to work with providers, and really appreciate working with Dana McKenzie and her team. So Minnesota broadband providers have invested about $1 billion, a little over $1 billion, in their high-quality networks since 2011 in Minnesota. And this private capital has improved quality of life and really expanded the accessibility of the Internet. And these investments have continued even during times of recession when other industries have cut back. So many cable companies, as Dana noted, have upgraded to provide really fast speeds, gig speeds, and not just in the metro. Mediacom, for example, has gig speeds almost across its entire Minnesota footprint, with the last town coming online in April. And this, like I said, includes many rural areas of the state. And to Senator, I think it was Johnson's question and how we've done that, I believe in Mediacom's case, they didn't dig any trenches. They didn't put any more fiber in the ground. They did that upgrade on their head end side of the equation at their with technology and software. So with more and more things connecting to the Internet at home and at school and in business, from telehealth to entertainment, the demand for our services, we've really seen them grow, and increased need for broadband speeds continue to grow too. So as we've talked about today, there are areas of the state that still lack broadband, areas where, as Brent said, the private investment case for broadband just simply doesn't work. And in some of those areas of the state, Minnesota Cable members have applied for and received broadband grants from Deed's Office of Broadband Development. And those grants are matched with private investment and have allowed our companies to extend their current networks and reach those hard, unserved areas of the state. So some examples of those projects who got grants back in 2017 would be Arvig, Schaumburg's, Mediacom, SCI, or Savage Communications, and Midco. And I have a list of those projects, but in the interest of time, I'll just let you ask me about those later. The program is working well. My counterparts in other states use Minnesota as a model. They're envious of our program and, like I said, the collaboration that we've had in the state. And so we see the program making progress. We don't see a need for policy changes. Most importantly, leveraging limited taxpayer funds to expand access in unserved areas of the state, we see that as sound public policy and should remain the program's first priority. Minnesota has also received federal funds for broadband, and so to Senator Dreheim's question about that, in the last round of CAF II funding, one of the federal broadband programs, Midco received funds to build out fixed wireless projects in Minnesota, which will receive, will reach 100,000 rural homes. This will edge out their current fiber network to serve those really remote rural areas. And the trials on those projects are receiving 120 or greater speeds. So those are really good. I also want to mention that one of our members, Dick Schoberg, sits on the Governor's Broadband Task Force, which just wrapped up their work, and we really appreciated representation on that too. Lastly, I wanted to mention the issue of broadband adoption. There was a question earlier about that. Percentage-wise, more Americans don't subscribe to broadband than don't have it available. And so I just want to mention that my members are engaged in making sure those who need help getting access also get access. So those programs give low-income families, seniors, veterans, those who are on HUD recipients, reduced price broadband. So supporting access to broadband is also very important to our member companies and to our communities too. So if I can answer any questions about any of those programs are across the state, urban, suburban, and rural. So I'd be happy to provide more information on those too if you're interested. So as my board members continue to make the case for more investment in Minnesota networks, I want to just reiterate our intent to work with state leaders such as yourselves to meet the broadband needs of all. So thank you for your time. Please use us as a resource, and I'm happy to answer any questions besides the technical ones, which will go to Brent.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Frentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to be back. Ms.
Good
Borough,
to have you back.
Thank you. Ms. Borough, just want to make sure we understood. You're saying that there are more people who could have it, they have access to it, but don't choose to buy it for whatever reason, then don't have access?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. They may have broadband available to them, but for whatever reason, maybe it's too expensive, maybe they're not aware of it, they don't access it. So the programs that I'm mentioning, Internet Essentials for Comcast, Charter has a program, and the other ones use federal Lifeline programs too. Those provide reduced cost broadband, $9.99 I think is the Comcast program. So those families who are on free or reduced lunch programs, veterans, there's a number of qualifications for those programs to help them get access.
Senator Frentz, I had the same question, so I couldn't follow those double knots. So. Thank you, Ms. Boroff, and last, Rural Broadband Coalition. Welcome to our committee, and identify yourself for the record, and you may proceed, and we'll stay on time here.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Westrom, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Hoffman. I'm the Chisago County HRA EDA Executive Director, but today I'm here representing the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition, and we're just really happy that we're here today to we have this opportunity to present our priorities to you. I would like to first direct your attention to the fact sheet in your packet and take a look at the back side. There are more than 70 members of the Minnesota Rural Coalition right now, and we have various governmental units from townships, township associations, counties, cities, development commissions. We have businesses, telecom providers, telecom associations, agriculture, Main Street businesses, manufacturing, healthcare, education. I mean, it's just across the board, and it's totally across the state. We have great representation and people that want to see, people in associations, organizations that want to see broadband border to border. Our first priority is base funding for the Border to Border Broadband Fund. The grant program is essential to reaching the state's 2026 broadband speed goals of 100 megabits up, I'm sorry, download, 20 megabits upload. And we really want to look forward to those speeds. 2026 won't be here long, and we're using more and more broadband. This also allows providers to extend and improve networks in the hardest to reach places in Minnesota. The program went unfunded for the fiscal year of 2019, and there remain significant portions of Minnesota, especially low-density rural areas, that continue to lack broadband services. Stable biennial funding incorporated into deeds-based funding will give confidence to providers and communities alike to continue to plan and build partnerships and prepare effective project proposals. The Coalition believes that funding the grant program at $70 million in order to achieve the 2026 speed goals as part of the base budget for year 20 and 21 is the highest priority. Funding the border-to-border broadband grant program is important to our coalition because broadband is important for a sustainable rural economy in Minnesota. There are proven economic benefits to reliable high-speed broadband across all sectors of Minnesota's economy, education, agriculture, Main Street businesses, and manufacturing and healthcare. To ensure rural areas, their businesses and citizens do not get left behind, it is critical for them to be able to access high-speed internet. And I want to veer from my script a little bit. I want to be cognizant of your time, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about an experience that we've had in Chisago County, and Brent Christensen did mention Sunrise Township. Actually, about half of that township, only half of it, was served with the border-to-border grant. The problem and the issue of going with a countywide plan is that when you have multiple providers, some of them are willing to work with you and some of them aren't. And so CenturyLink was willing to work with us, and they covered half of Sunrise Township, so we got half of that township done. Because of the success there and the model and the experience that we had, we were able to do that in one other township in Chisago County, Fish Lake Township. So we have 1.5 townships done and 7.5 townships to go. We're currently working with two townships in the southern part of the county where it's the most underserved. And the provider in that area was not willing to work with us, but we have found another. And so we are talking about a plan to bring broadband to that area. But for the grant, we would not be able to do it. But we also need to invest about $15,000 into some engineering and things like that, as well as surveying. And just knowing that this is in the base budget really allows us to have that time to put our plan together and to be able to move forward with a project. We're so thankful we received the funds for the 1.5 townships, and we certainly would like to keep moving throughout the county and getting the other 7.5 townships done. I'll go back to my script here. Our second priority is to continue to support the Office of Broadband Development. It's a symbol that improving broadband networks and services across the state is a shared nonpartisan priority for Minnesotans. The Office of Broadband Development provides a critical link between communities and providers, documenting successful infrastructure project design and management. We believe the office should be maintained into the future and enhanced to include a role in promoting the adoption and use of broadband, including broadband-based economic development strategies, so that the highest possible value is gained from broadband infrastructure investments. As work begins on the 2020-2021 biennial budget, base budget funding for the Office of Broadband Development remains a priority for the coalition. And then our third priority is to continuation of the task force. The governor's broadband task force has been crucial to the success of the border-to-border program and its funding. It's provided opportunities for community members, advocates, providers, consumers, and others to have input and make recommendations on broadband policy in Minnesota. We encourage the governor to take appropriate steps to assure the continuation of this effort. So in closing, one of the things economic development agencies, local governments, and businesses are looking for is consistent and stable funding to allow us to be creative and collaborative in our approach to providing broadband services to our communities and businesses. A significant investment in ongoing funding for broadband is key to achieving these goals. So I thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Members, questions for the testifier? I think you covered it all.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming and sharing that your perspective with us and advocating on behalf of your communities with this issue. I think we've seen how impacting it is across the entire state, mm-hmm. and helpful to have this feedback as we contemplate, you know, the value of a program and the need, and you know, are we getting bang for our buck? And I think it's a compelling argument that that this is a well run, high efficient use of taxpayer dollars. I'd like the example of one of you used the scalpel. We're just filling in where the scalpel can precisely carve out, and so I thought that was very telling and good for us to hear as stewards of the taxpayers as well. So which you all are taxpayers, and we want to be mindful, but we want a program that works well, and broadband is very important to economic development. So other questions, members? Otherwise, I think we've got a great base to work off of. Broadband 101 has soon concluded. So, Ms. Hoffman, thanks again to you and all the testifiers. Members, with that, we'll conclude Broadband 101.
Thank you.
Meeting.